Now let's begin.
A Star Trek podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And joining me is the Trek 1701 panel. First up, we've got Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, good. Hello, everyone.
Next, we have Richard. How's it going, Richard?
Not too bad. You know, living that dad life, but life's good. Glad to be back.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Curtis. How's it going, Curtis?
Fantastic. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So for this episode, we're talking about Enterprise, which would later be renamed Star Trek Enterprise in Season 3. We're talking about the first season of Enterprise. And so, like, the thing with Enterprise, and this is just my opinion, I'm not as much of an expert on Enterprise as I am Deep Space Nine, and it doesn't hold near and dear to my heart the way Deep Space Nine does. So for the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes, we would focus on every episode, and we would talk about, you know, every episode pretty much. But for Enterprise, honestly, out of the 26 episodes, there's really only 11 that I found really watchable, you know. So what we'll do is we'll go over each episode, but we might not necessarily go into in depth with each episode, unless, you know, one of them is near and dear to, you know, one of our hearts, then we might focus on a little bit more. All right, so without further ado, let's get this started. So as I mentioned, this is season one of Enterprise, and it originally aired between 2001 and 2002. So this September, it'll be 20 years since Enterprise hit the airwaves, and that's just crazy. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
Because, like we were talking about on our last episode, like I watched this right like when it launched. So it's crazy to me that it was 20 years ago. And it's funny because I ran into an old school friend of mine today, and I attended her wedding. And it would have been around the same time, about 20 years ago this September. And it just blew my mind that she's been married for 20 years. All right, so let's break down the episodes, and we'll focus on the ones we like. So the first episode, which is episode 1 and 2, but it was I think it originally aired as a 2-hour pilot, is Broken Bow. Original air date, April 16th. What? Oh, no, sorry. The date, instead of the star date, we have dates on Enterprise. So this episode takes place on April 16th, 2151. Directed by James L. Conway, written by Rick Berman and Brana Braga, the creators of the show. Original air date was September 26th, 2001. So for this episode, it was the pilot. It's 9 decades since Zefram Cochrane produced humans' first warp flight, as seen in Star Trek First Contact. And Earth finally launches its first starship of exploration, the Enterprise NX-01, commanded by Captain Jonathan Archer, and against the objections of the Vulcans. It departs on an urgent mission to return the injured Klingon to Kronos, the Klingon homeworld. We got John Fleck as Silic in this episode. We got Von Armstrong as Admiral Forrest. Jim Beaver. I didn't realize that was Jim Beaver. Admiral Daniel Leonard. Now, Jim Beaver, he was, like, I never watched Supernatural, but he was on the TV series Supernatural. But he's also, if you ever watch Breaking Bad, he's the guy that sells Walter the big machine gun he uses in the finale. He's the gun guy.
Okay.
He's the gun guy on Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
he's just one of those actors that just shows up everywhere. And of course, a cameo by James Cromwell as Zephram Cochrane in a recording. As far as pilot episodes go, I have to say, I think it was the last episode we did, I said Voyager was my favorite pilot episode of a Star Trek series. I would say this is my second favorite pilot episode. I really, like I said, I'm a huge fan of Scott Bakula. You know, I liked all the characters that they introduced. I really liked the look of the Enterprise. I really loved the buttons. You know, there was no touch screens. It was all actually push buttons, which was very reminiscent of the original series. And I thought the Suliban were awesome. I like the idea of this temporal Cold War. You know, it was first introduced here. It was a very solid first episode. Richard, what are your thoughts on Broken Bow?
I also really liked it, and when I first watched it and I saw the Klingon, I said to myself, what the actual heck is going on here? Because as we all know, in the original series, Klingons didn't look like that.
Yep.
So I thought to myself, how are they going to explain this? And back then, I wasn't as knowledgeable in continuity as I am now, but I was still curious what they were going to say about it. And I knew that they were going to at some point. They had to. And there were some bits, like in the original briefing when Archer comes into the observation room with all the Vulcans and stuff. If I recall correctly, Archer was kind of the dickhead in that situation.
Yep.
Like, straight away. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way, you know? He could have been a little bit more diplomatic and less of an asshole, but still being aggressive. I don't know. It was still a good episode. I enjoyed, like, kind of the backstory showing young Jonathan Archer. And and of course, the recording with Zephram Cochrane. And then that was basically when I knew that, hey, like, the Suliban are badass. These guys are going to be really cool. And I really, really like this idea of a temporal Cold War. It's not something that we'd ever encountered in Star Trek. You know, I was like, dude, that's crazy. Because there's so many layers and there's so much complications that could happen with any kind of time travel. Like, a lot of people don't realize how dangerous time travel can be. Like, when you think about things like the butterfly effect, like, you could move a rock from left to right as an example in the past, and somehow that could change the outcome of an entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit exaggerated, but it's still extremely dangerous, and I just thought it was really cool that they were going to, like, delve into that. And as the show goes on, these things that we learn in the very first episode, you learn that, like, it's kind of played out through most of the series, and that was really cool, this whole idea that, you know, an entire series had a sort of arc in and of itself. And I thought that was awesome.
Yep. Ragnar.
That's all I got to say about that.
Ragnar, your thoughts.
I liked that they, right off the hop, we see a Klingon, and right off the hop, he looks like a Klingon. They didn't try to make the Klingons look like how they did in the original series, of which the show is set before. So I thought that was cool. Like I was saying in our last episode, if you pretend the original series never really happened, and you watch this, and then you watch Next Gen, and then you watch DS9 and Voyager, it really does work. Mm-hmm. But if you watch this, and then you immediately watch the original series, it doesn't work. It doesn't work so hard. So, anyways, I like that the Klingons look like Klingons, but if you were going to watch this and then the original series, you're going to have some questions about that.
Yep.
Otherwise, for me, even this episode, I found hard to get through. I had to watch it. I had to take a run at it more than once before I got all the way through because the pacing is so slow. Mm. And I'm not saying it's bad.
Yep.
It's not bad. It's just very slow. And I found that very hard to get into. So in season one, I think there's only three episodes that really gripped me and pulled me in, and this was not one of them.
Fair enough. Yeah. I can definitely see that. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Short and sweet. I'm with Ragnar. This one, to me, was just a little bit too slow to hold my attention. I've rewatched Enterprise fairly recently, just this past winter, and I'm reading the synopsis right now, and I'm like, what do you mean? I don't even remember that happening. I don't remember most of this episode, so I'm just gonna... I mean, Star Trek doesn't really have particularly strong pilots, in my opinion.
No.
And this, I mean, this one's right in line with Star Trek tradition, I guess. The characters were cool. I enjoyed that part. I enjoyed seeing, like Ragnar said, I enjoyed seeing the new Klingons. I liked the aesthetic of the bridge of the Enterprise as compared to this, like, super sanitized, blowy, touchscreeny, nerdy paradise that we were used to. So those parts were cool, but as an episode, I struggle to even remember it, I gotta say.
And what's the ironic thing about the touchscreens, too, is they were probably cheaper, you know, than actually building, like, a physical, you know, console. Like to
totally.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like a piece of paper underneath glass that's lit, you know? Like Michael Okuda, he's the guy that designed those touchscreens. I mean, they look beautiful. Like, they look awesome, but, you know, people... I don't know. I think some people think, well, they kind of went low budget with Enterprise, but they really didn't, because that bridge, I bet you, is way more expensive to have made than the Next Generation's bridge.
Oh, easily.
Yep. I read an article with one of the, and it might have been the guy you just mentioned, who's one of the guy who was one of the set designers, and he said every season of Enterprise they added more buttons and switches and screens to the bridge to make it seem like humanity was evolving technologically too. Mm. And I never really noticed it until I read that article, and then yeah, when you go from season to season, the bridge, it doesn't look different. It just looks more like busier, like more full. Yeah.
And then the NX-02 had like the cool lights and stuff. I thought that was.
I was just
thinking that too. Like, because when they go to warp or whatever on the NX-02, like the lights like that are on either side of the captain's chair, like go faster. It's almost like, you know, they're given like warp core indication or something, but I don't know.
I'll bet those lights that were on the bridge of the NX-02 came from the turbo lift in TNG.
Yeah. Yep. I could see that for sure. All right. Well, the next episode is Fight or Flight. The date is May 6th, 2151. Directed by Alan Croker. Written by Rick Berman and Brannon Braga. Original air date, October 3rd, 2001. And this is one that, kind of like what Curtis was saying, this happened. I'm going over the plot and I'm really drawing a blank. The crew of the Enterprise is settling in. They're slowly getting acquainted with one another. The crew is restless as they have not encountered anything new in the past 2 weeks. Captain Archer is trying to locate a squeak in his ready room and is anxious that they have not discovered anything worthwhile, any worthwhile planets. Yet Sub-Commander T'Pol points out the Vulcans don't select their destination by what piques their interest, as they don't share humanity's enthusiasm for exploration. I really don't remember much going on in this episode. Anyone else want to chime in on this episode?
I remember this episode, but I didn't really care for it. This is kind of a skipper for me.
Yeah.
If it's a skipper
for Richard, it's a skipper for everyone.
In Enterprise, yeah, you're probably right on that one. Like, there was just a couple of different boring, you know, subplots, and there was some nonsense about some ship, and honestly, like, you could have taken it right out, and you wouldn't notice it, you know? Yeah. It was definitely one of those. I don't think it had anything important in it, things like that. So, like, yeah, it was a skipper. Like, watch it one time just so you kind of get the gist, and then every other rewatch, I kind of skip this one.
And to be honest with you, like, I'm looking at the viewership. So this is in the United States. The first episode got 12.54 million viewers. By the end of the season, they were down to 5.28. Oof. So it seems like as the season goes on, they lose viewers. All right, so anyone else want to chime in on this episode? All right.
Nah.
Let's move on to the next one. It's called Strange New World. The date is unknown. Directed by David Livingston. Story by Rick Berman and Bronn and Braga. Teleplay by Mike Sussman and Phyllis Strawn. Original air date is October 10th, 2001. So they are on this planet, and basically they're going to spend the night on the planet, and then people start going apeshit crazy. And it's one of those where, you know, they're breathing in something, makes them all go crazy, they get paranoid, and the doctor's got to figure out how to get everyone back together again. So it's kind of like on Next Generation, like they did the Naked Now episode, or the original series, The Naked Time. It's one, you know, or that one with Spock when he sniffs the flowers and gets the girl. It's kind of like that. This was definitely a skip for me. Does anyone else want to talk about it?
Nah.
I don't have a lot to say about it. I don't know if I would agree that it is in the same vein as, like, Naked Time and Naked Now, but it was just... I don't know.
Well,
this one was not that good, and it was kind of forced, you know. Just like, hey, you know, let's go camping and let's use the transporter and get mixed up with some leaves. And man, I love Enterprise, but there's some episodes that are just not good.
Yeah, like I compared to the Naked Now because, or Naked Time, because those are episodes where characters act out a character because something's happening, and this was kind of like that, where Tucker thought T'Pol was up to something, and T'Pol was starting to get angry, and you know, I think if you're gonna do this type of episode, you should maybe wait closer to the end of the season, or maybe season two, when we the viewers actually know what the characters are like. So we can see them acting out of character, as you know, see that what's happening is a little bit more shocking, I would think. Curtis,
I think a little bit more, more episodes before this one would have made more sense. Maybe put it like the fifth or sixth, not like the third.
Yeah.
Or fourth.
Curtis, did you have any thoughts on this one? No.
He had messaged something about microphone trouble.
Oh, okay.
And he wanted to know if you could edit out any weird parts from him, and I'm assuming you can.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't pick up anything weird. But check. Oh, there he is. There's Curtis.
Okay, so it turns out I'm actually using the wrong mic. That's okay. I just struggled through it. As for the episode, yeah, you know what? I'm going to be the oddball here. I did like this episode. Unashamedly. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the Naked Now like the second or third episode of TNG overall?
Naked Now, yeah, it was the second one, yeah.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen the original series. I've seen the first episode. I haven't seen any of the others. The Naked Time, is that in the first season as well, by any chance?
Yes, that's the first season of the original series, yeah.
Okay, so that's probably sort of what they were going for, was a bit of an homage, because in DS9, didn't they have, in the first season also, that aphasia episode?
Yeah,
It seems like it's like a running tradition to sort of have something that screws with their minds in some way or another early in the first season. And I agree, it's a little premature, but I don't know. I dig this episode. I think the actors did a great job. I totally bought everything that was happening. Maybe I'm just a sucker with no taste. I can live with that if that's the case. But I really enjoyed the episode.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. You know, that's why I say, you know, not every episode is for everybody, I don't think. But I do, the Naked Now, the one good thing that came out of that was seeing Tasha Yar seducing Data. I think that was the first time.
I thought that never happened, though. That's what Tasha
said. Yeah.
Oh, it happened. Trust.
That was the first time I ever remember seeing under boob, like under cleavage. You know? Like, and I was like, how are they not falling out? Like, it was just mind blowing as a pre puberty, you know, little horn dog guy.
You don't understand jiggle physics yet.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, wow, she was amazing. Anyway, let's move on. So the next episode is episode 5 of the series, Unexpected. The date is unknown. Directed by Michael Viger. The first few batch of episodes, Rick Berman's doing a lot of writing. This one's written by Rick Berman and Brana Braga as well. Original air date, October 17th, 2001. So on my list, this is a watch. A ship feeding off Enterprise's warp field is exposed after the crew ignites the plasma exhaust. Commander Tucker takes a trip to the ship to help them repair their warp drive. After his return to Enterprise, he learns that he is pregnant. The nature of this event becomes a major plot device of the episode and took the series into the realm of hard science fiction. Because he does some sort of hollow.
It's like a version of a mind meld.
Yeah, yeah. And then he ends up.
It's SpaceX.
Yeah. And,
if only it was as much fun as real sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and we also see the Klingons in this episode, because that ship later is hooked onto a Klingon ship. And the Klingons, of course, want to destroy them. T'Pol later informs Tucker that this was the first recorded instance of human male pregnancy. So the embryo and you have to safely. Oh yeah, so they take the embryo out of him and give it to one of the other people of that species. I remember this being kind of like a fun episode. Like I love a good Tucker episode. Let's go with Ragnar. What are your thoughts, sir?
I don't have a whole lot to say. I thought it was an interesting concept. You know, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito did a movie like this or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Junior?
No, yeah, Danny DeVito wasn't that. That was Twins. But yeah, didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger do...
That was also Danny DeVito.
Yep.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then there was the English actress. I actually really like that movie. I think it's called Junior. And it's Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito and Schwarzenegger are just classic together.
Oh, man. So
both good. Those movies are top-notch, but that's off topic.
So, Anyways, you know, I think it was an interesting concept. I think they executed it well, but I don't know. It didn't blow me away. I was kind of like, yeah, okay, all right. I guess it's time we do that. You know, like it didn't, I don't know. They didn't reinvent the wheel or anything with this.
No. Richard Curtis, any thoughts?
Actually, I really like this episode. I'm not going to lie. The idea of, like, having to go to an alien spaceship, going through their decontamination, and then getting messed up because their environment's so different really makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, turns out that they're kind of a weird species in general. And he's learning new things, like, as an engineer, like, as a mind like that. It's just, like, super cool. And then but one thing I didn't really care for was the whole Archer shower gravity plating scene that didn't really make sense. And, you know, there are better ways to show that, like, you can fix problems in space. This was kind of, I hate to call it slapstick because I like slapstick, but it was like it tried to be slapstick, like tried to be funny, but it didn't really work out. But everything else, though, like, you know, the situation with the Klingons and then, like, feeding off the exhaust manifolds, like, that was really cool. So, like, I did like this episode a lot. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Well, and one thing I noticed, like, with Enterprise in particular, it is, they always find excuses to, like, get the crew, like, dressed down. You know, like, either naked or...
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, we got to go into decontamination. Oh, geez. So now you got T'Pol and you got Tucker. You got, you know, everyone's rubbing each other down. Because they have to for decontamination purposes. But yet you never see, you know, Chris from engineering, you know, who's, you know, packing a few extra pounds. You don't see him getting rubbed down by T'Pol.
I bet Chris would pay good money for that one.
Yes, it would. I think any Chris would. But
absolutely.
Agreed.
But, you know, it's always the pretty, you know, athletic people, I guess. I don't know.
I totally get what you're saying. Yeah. But always the same. It's always like the same two anyways.
Yeah.
It's always Tucker and T'Pol always end up naked or half naked.
Well, and it's just a trope of the times, you know, like the 90s, the 2000s, you know, it's, you know, like what I was saying before about, you know, like how T'Pol's always wearing, you know, her cat suit, you know, 709 had a cat suit, you know, Counselor McBoobs had her boobs hanging out all the time, you know, like it was just something that they, you know, it was a cheap trick to get in male viewers. And, you know, and I know that, like, that's not why I was watching Star Trek. I mean, it was an added bonus, don't get me wrong. But now looking at it, you know, it's so unnecessary, you know. And it's funny because the mindset kind of changed, you know, very quickly. Because when Battlestar Galactica came out, like the new, well, not new now, but new, like the 2000s, you know, you take someone like Katie Sackhoff, you know, who played Starbuck. Like, she's a very, very beautiful woman, but yet they never had her wearing a cat suit. Like, she wore the Viper uniform just like every other pilot, right? But then they would do that that episode later in the first season where they're at, like, a dress party, and you see her in a dress, and it's like, whoa, you know? You know, it's she's beautiful, and I kind of wish Star Trek would have done that a little bit more, like have them be more realistic with their attire, and then, you know, on the you know, the random episode, it'd be nice to see, you know, like T'Pol in a dress or something. But anyway, I'm rambling. I digress. All right, the next episode is Skip on
Actually,
my.
I had some stuff to say.
Oh, sorry, Curtis. Cool. Sorry, Curtis. Go ahead.
No problem. How's the sound coming through? I did switch to a new mic.
You sound good. Sound good.
Perfect. As long as I'm not blowing out eardrums, that's the main thing. Okay, a few things. Number one, scantily clad scenes, while not necessary, are totally part of the charm of, like, that era of sci-fi.
Yeah,
I think. And could we do without it? Yeah, okay, sure. But it was just part of the flavor, you know? Although I don't agree that they had to rub each other down for decontamination purposes. I mean, spray tanning booths totally existed by then. but I'm not mad that they did, you know? I'm not upset that they had to rub each other down at all, whatsoever. And it's always to Paul and Tucker. You'd think other people would go on away missions at some point.
And I just want to add real quick. Like, I've taken hazmat training. You're not actually supposed to touch other people, you know, just in case they're contaminated with something that you're not. You know what I mean?
You get in the shower and you pull the handle.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, go ahead, Curtis.
Right. Oh, and as for the Archer shower scene, Richard's go-to humorous device are puns, so you're not going to be my laugh track, homie. I'm sorry. I thought that scene was charmingly funny. Not hilarious or gut-splitting, but, I like a little slapstick. What can I say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I like slapstick, too, but it just... Sorry, go on.
Dude, I've lived with you. You live like a slapstick skit in real life, so I can understand why you might find it
tiresome. My life is a slapstick skit, bro.
As for the episode itself...
That's bragging rights, man.
Well, you don't know. Live with them for 6 months. You'll see. as for the episode itself, I agree. It totally makes sense that going into an alien ship, you would almost more often than not, you should have to go through some sort of like wear your enviro suit or something or deal with a different atmosphere, different gravity. Totally makes sense. So I'm glad that they included that for a change. What bothered me is this not where they introduced holodeck technology for the first time, canonically?
Yes.
And cloaking technology, as far as I'm aware. Or no, they had that back... this is before Kirk, so what am I thinking? It bothers me that they were sort of just deus ex machina, these two technologies for no reason, by the way. You know, this one species in the entire corner of the Alpha Quadrant that we get around to in this series just happen to have both cloaking technology and holodeck technology. And like it didn't need to be explained, and I feel like they just threw it in there to like justify its presence in later series. And that kind of bothered me. Okay, that's all I had.
All right. Excellent. All right, the next episode is episode 6. It's called Terra Nova. The date is unknown. Directed by Jordy LaForge, LeVar Burton. Story, once again, by Rick Berman and Bronn Braga. Teleplay by Antoinette Stella. Original air date, October 24th, 2001. So on my list, this is a skip. So I'll just quickly... The Enterprise learns the fate of a human colony not heard from for 7 years. When the crew arrives... They discover unexplained radiation at the site of the colony. Understanding that radiation levels 70 years ago would have been lethal, they find people still there living underground. Yeah, this one was not my favorite. I'll pass on this one. Does anyone else want to talk about it?
I do.
All right, Richard, go ahead.
That episode was shale. It's all shale.
Your shale. In fact, I actually really liked it. The concept of it was just interesting to me, is that like a people that didn't have many adults, if any, they grew up from a very young age on their own, teaching themselves. And if you listen to all the words, they make sense. They're just kind of backwards, like a young person would have been saying them, and that's what they've been taught for years and years. And the actor that played one of the like the leader men, he's in so many things. I forget his name, but he's really good, and I like seeing him in this episode. He was in one of the Mummy movies.
Yes, his name's Eric Avari. He was actually on Deep Space Nine. He was a
Vedic. He's been in Star Trek. Yeah, and I really like him as an actor, and I thought that it was kind of cool, just the idea of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the best episode by any means, but I really like the concept and I like to watch it. But for most people, I get that it's a skip.
Excellent. All right. The next episode is episode 7, The Andorian Incident. The date is June 19th, 2151, directed by Roxanne Dawson. So B'Elanna Torres directed this. Once again, written by Rick Berman and Brian Braga, but this time they wrote it with Fred Decker, who also did the teleplay. Original air date, Halloween 2001. So this is definitely a watch for me. As one of the most significant of the first season episode, the events of the Andorian incident would continue to resonate into the third and fourth season. This would in particular affect T'Pol and her family. Captain Archer and Commander Tucker, after finding the Vulcan star maps incomplete, talk Subcommander T'Pol into making a trip to Pajem, a Vulcan monastery. When they arrive, they find the monastery has unwelcome guests, the Andorians. Featuring Jeffrey Combs as Commander Shran. For the first time, we see Shran. Yeah, I love this episode. The Andorians, you know, like we've seen them a few times in the original series in like guest roles. And then like they were basically like background, like you'd see them occasionally in a background as a background character on The Next Generation. Like I think Captain's Holiday, you've seen one walking around Ryza. And then Data.
And fun fact, one of the appearances of Lol, Data's daughter, was potentially going to be an Andorian.
I was just going to say that. That was the next one. I always thought they looked cool, and I always wished that they would bring them back in Star Trek. And I'm glad they brought them back, because not only did they bring them back, but they made them, in my mind, better. Like, they looked just a little bit better. I guess makeup, you know, has, you know, evolved over, you know, 40 years or whatever at that point. 35 years. And, like, the fact that their antennas move, I think that was such an awesome little touch. And then, yeah, I mean, we've all gushed about Jeffrey Combs. Yeah, and it's... We're not wrong. Like, he is so amazing as an actor, and his characters are always memorable. Like Shran, every time he showed up, I was happy, you know. Just like every time he showed up on Deep Space Nine, when I'd see his name in the credits at the beginning of the episode, you know, I'd tell myself this is going to be a good one. You know, Jeffrey Combs is in it. All right, Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Well, I got to say, this is the first one, like, if you were to binge watch, you'd be getting, for me, I get a little bit sleepy around the end of the last episode. This one wakes me right the hell up. Mm-hmm. This was the one where I was like, okay, I am watching Star Trek now, and I know it. This was the first episode of this series that really came out and punched me in the face. Like, this is where it got its Star Trek chops, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on everything regarding the Andorians. Just the fact that their antennas moved a little bit. It's amazing how much gravitas that one little change really, really had.
Yep.
Like, it just added to the whole scene. Obligatory acknowledgement of Jeffrey Combs and his greatness. I don't even know where to start. Like, just the pacing was right on. It felt like somebody had a very clear vision of exactly how this episode would go. And they nailed it. Everything happened in the right order. It happened at the right time. And who knew that... Roxanne Dawson's character in Voyager. Come on.
B'Elanna Torres.
Jesus. I don't know how I forgot that. Who knew that I would enjoy something B'Elanna Torres did?
Wow.
No, sorry. Just B'Elanna Torres is a character that bothers me. Roxanne Dawson's... I got no complaints, but the B'Elanna character really bothered me.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to meet Shran. Shran is, especially over the course of the series, one of the best characters, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But you know what? I'm sure we'll have lots of time to gush about Jeffrey Combs and his characters later on, so I'll pass it over.
All right. Rich, your thoughts?
I don't know what else I could add. Like, I really like this episode. The whole, you know, Vulcans are hypocrites things just were awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that whole situation. And, of course, like, Vulcan monks, it's just kind of like a trope internally, like, kind of like an inside joke for me. And then the whole idea of, like, the Temple of Pajem and all this cool stuff. And then they found a secret listening base. Just, man, come on. It is a terrible place or a great place, depending on your perspective. But, of course, you know, Jeffrey Combs, he to me is like the Andorian. Like, if I want to know what an Andorian is, he's the guy that I would look at. Like, this guy makes Andor. He made Andorians cool again. And I liked Andorians previous to this. Mm-hmm. But Jeffrey Combs made Andorians badass. Not just some random species like the Tellarites. You know what I mean?
Or just the hottest chicks at the conventions would always dress up as Andorians. That's what I knew about Andorians before Enterprise.
Or Orions. It's pretty much that. Do you like green or do you like blue? Yeah, that's all I got to say about that. Great episode. Do not skip.
Excellent. And Ragnar.
Well, if it hadn't have been for this episode, I would have given up on this series for sure. This was the episode in season one where finally some payoff. Finally, yep. Watching all these episodes that are really slow, and they're not bad. They're just slow and. Then this episode, I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. And, yeah, we got to do a kudos to Jeffrey Combs for having waving antennas on his head and playing it serious. Because, you know, it wouldn't have been too hard to make that a really, really comedic role, but he didn't go that way. So, yeah. This is a great episode. And if it wasn't for this episode, I would never have gotten through the series. But this one was good enough to make me try harder.
Yeah, this one was definitely the one where I was like, wait a second, you know, there's something happening here.
If I could add, we got given the message very clearly. This is a crew of action. Like, mm-hmm. Other Star Trek series had some action-y parts, but it was never quite as
pronounced.
It wasn't quite as raw. It was very movie fight kind of thing.
Like, mm-hmm.
I don't know. The action sequences were just sort of in the other Star Treks, and outside of Sisko punching Q, they weren't really that. There wasn't a lot of meat to them. I don't know if I'm explaining this well or not, but we really got to see him, you know, tucking and rolling in this one, as it were.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first episode where Archer gets beat up, right?
Oh, he gets the snot kicked out of him. Yeah.
Because that's definitely a trope that follows him throughout the series. In the way that O'Brien must suffer.
Archer must also suffer.
Yeah. Archer's like Ben from Lost. Most of the time you see him, he's just getting his ass kicked. Maybe not.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Archer, yeah, he sure takes a punch, man. I mean, he can give a punch, but he takes them. All right, so the next episode is episode 8, Breaking the Ice, Date Unknown, directed by Terry Wendell, and I'm sorry I'm going to butcher these names, but Andre Jacquemetin and Maria Jacquemetin. Original air date, November 7th, 2001. So this is a skip for me. Real quickly, Enterprise enters a comet. Lieutenant Reed and Ensign Mayweather stop to mine some Elysium? To their surprise, the Vulcan ship Timur stops to observe the Enterprise. Meanwhile, when Commander Tucker unexpectedly becomes the only crewman to learn that Sub-Commander T'Pol has to make a decision between staying aboard the Enterprise or return to Vulcan for her impending marriage, she asks his advice. This starts a steadily deepening personal bond between the pair over the remainder of the series. For me, this is a skip. Does anyone else want to talk about it?
That's a skip.
All right. The next episode is Episode 9, Civilization. The date is July 31st, 2151, directed by Michael Viger. Written by Mike Sussman and Phyllis Strawn. Original air date November 14th, 2001. So again, this is a skip for me. Enterprise investigates a pre-industrial civilization of about 500 million people. They discover there's another warp-capable species among the unsuspecting inhabitants. After Captain Archer and Commander Tucker, Ensign Sato, and Sub-Commander T'Pol arrive, they discover a local scientist who believes that a newly arrived merchant is causing a sickness in the town. Yeah. As I said, this is a skip. Does anyone want to talk? This is the one where Archer meets that chick, right? And she's following him around.
There's a really old word.
Apothecary?
The apothecary woman.
Oh, yes.
And they kind of have like a little connection there. I like these episodes that kind of show like, you know, where they use duck blinds or they infiltrate a species to learn more about them. Because there's episodes like that through Star Trek, like Deep Space. I don't think Deep Space Nine really had it, but TNG did.
Yep.
And Voyager had it. And actually, Star Trek Insurrection, that was kind of the whole basis of the movie.
Yep.
And I liked that kind of thing. I enjoyed it. I liked the Akali, like the species are called the Akali. And then the whole, like, you know, we got the bad guy amongst, you know, the innocent species. Like, that was an interesting sort of, like, plot. I liked it. It's not the best, obviously, so on and so forth, but I enjoyed it. But that's just me.
Excellent. Anyone else want to chime in?
This one's kind of just another one of those Captain Archer sticks his aristocratic-looking nose into other people's business again. That's what it strikes me as.
Yeah, all right. You know, it's not a bad episode. It's not a bad concept. It just, I don't know, didn't blow me away. This is like, you watch the Andorian incident, and you're like, whoa, okay, this show does have potential. And then the next, like, two or three episodes after, like,
That kind of means Villano was a better engineer than Geordi a little bit, because this one was a LeVar Burton directed episode.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't write it. He just took the material and the characters as presented and put them in front of a camera.
Oh no,
I'm not sure what they could have done with this.
This one wasn't Geordi. This one was Michael Viger. The next one's Geordi.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong tab. That's my bad.
All right, so the next episode is Episode 10, Fortunate Son, date unknown, directed by Geordi LaForge, LeVar Burton, written by James Duff, original air date November 21st, 2001. So this is a skip on my list. Captain Archer is contacted by Admiral Forrest to assist ECS Fortunate, a Y-class freighter. Archer, Lieutenant Reed, Dr. Phlox, and Ensign Mayweather learn from the first officer that the Fortunate was attacked by Nausicaans. And the captain was injured. Enterprise helps repair the Fortunate until sensors show that the 23-member crew has an additional person aboard. I don't know if I even remember this one.
I was just thinking that. I don't remember anything about this episode.
I remember this episode.
So what are your thoughts, Richard?
I actually, surprisingly enough, I liked it. I love that they're bringing in the Nausicaans as the pirates, because that's pretty much all they are. They're dirty scoundrel pirates, and I love pirates. And they're unashamedly brutal, and they just don't give any fucks. They're like, yep, we're pirates. We're going to shoot you down. We're going to take your stuff. And there's not a lot you can do about it. And then these guys decide to fight back, which I always think is funny because, you know, you almost always lose it against a pirate. Mm-hmm. And just as like a side note, they were sort of doing this low gravity football toss, you know, in one of the cargo chambers. And I thought that was awesome because I would totally do that and just be like, yo, you want to throw a football in low gravity? Because that would be just, you know, really cool. I don't know if I'd ever get tired of that. And then, yeah, and it sort of shows life on a freighter class ship, and that's more or less all they've had for a long time, and that's where Travis Mayweather came from, was I think he was on a J class and this is a Y class, if I recall correctly. And this kind of just showed a bit of that life. Like, you're literally 6, 8, 10 months between ports. What are you going to do? You know, we have similar, I don't know anymore, but we had, that used to be all we had was just ships running cargo. And, I just thought it was really cool. I enjoyed the episode. And I enjoyed the Nausicaans because they're badass.
Yeah. I think you're just partial to pirates because you've been playing Sea of Thieves for like 2 months.
Well, I've always been partial to pirates, and I've been playing Sea of Thieves for the second round now for a few months, but I played it a couple of years back quite a lot too. But yeah, pirates are just cool. You can't tell me that they're not cool. And if you did, I'd say you were lying.
I'm not going to make that claim.
That's right, because Captain Jack Sparrow will find you.
All right, anyone else want to chime in on this episode?
Nah.
All right. Next episode is episode 11. It is Cold Front. The date is September 12th, 2151. Directed by Tom Paris himself, Robert Duncan McNeil. Written by Stephen Beck and Tim Finch. Original air date November 28th, 2001. And this is a watch for me. The episode reveals more about the temporal Cold War story arc first introduced in the pilot episode. Captain Archer is confronted by a member of his crew who claims to be from 900 years in the future. And is there to capture a Suliban operative who has boarded the Enterprise. So once again, we got John Fleck as Silic, Matt Winston as Agent Daniels from the future. I like this episode. It was awesome to, you know, get that temporal Cold War thing going on, which I still think is a great plot line. It really sucks that it kind of got dropped at the beginning of season 4, but I really liked it. I really like Silic. I think he's an awesome adversary. I like that actor who plays Silic, and Daniels. I like Daniels because I still don't like, because he gets killed in this episode, but yet he comes back later. So I don't know how that happened. I'm assuming because someone changed the timeline at some point, Daniels was able to come back to life.
It's called temporal fuckery, and that's the scientific term.
Nope, but there's an entire saga you can play through regarding the temporal Cold War and Star Trek Online.
Excellent.
Well, there it is.
It really fleshes out it really fleshes out Daniels a bit more, and you'll understand a little bit more of what's going on. But in Enterprise, you really only see the parts that are relevant to Archer. There's a lot more to it, and go play Star Trek Online.
Yeah, if you're going to do a Star Trek spinoff series, a Daniels series would be good. Like, I don't know if you could get that actor. And I'm not saying he's, you know, in any way like a spectacular actor or anything. But it's an interesting concept, I think, to have, you know, this guy travel through time and put right what once went wrong. Kind of like Sam Beckett. Oh, yep. Sorry, that's my dog scratching at the chair again.
We would all give the dog pets if we could, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't. Yep. It's like she's trying to bury something, but she's not. I don't know. She's making the couch fluffier, I guess. All right. Let's go around the table. And Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Man, great episode. This is where they really get into the temporal war, the temporal Cold War, and it's awesome. Daniel shows him his huge, like, 3D VR galaxy map, which is freaking sick. The whole concept of it is just like, I look at a map on my phone or on the computer, or, you know, we used to have the, remember those old things in our cars? We had real maps.
Mm-hmm.
We're all old enough to remember that. And then you think for a second, like, what would it be like if that map was all around me, top, bottom, left, right, you know, 980 degrees, just boom. That's just awesome. I love that whole concept. And Silic, you know, as Silic does. And I like the subplot of the spiritual guys. They were there to see the great plume of Agasaurium. I thought that was super cool. Never skip this one. This is a fantastic episode. There's a fair bit of exposition here, and you learn a lot about what you need to know as you're going along. And, yeah, great episode.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. This was another good one. And, of course, if you're going to watch the rest of the series, this is a fairly important one to the temporal Cold War plot line.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good one. This is another one that, like, okay, there's something to this series. I think there's four episodes or five episodes this season that I like, and this is definitely one of them.
Yep. Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts?
Well, as has been stated, this is, in fact, required reading. I'm going to have to rewatch this one because I don't remember a lot. The only part of it I can really solidly remember is the, like Richard said, the cool 3D galactic. The effects were so well done on that big map that Daniels has.
Yeah.
And Malcolm being stodgy about no one should visit the tactical areas of the ship because, you know, he thinks humans have just the most advanced stuff and everyone else might steal our secrets. It's like, well, maybe your secrets aren't that good because you keep getting your ass kicked everywhere you turn. So maybe just calm down a little bit. Malcolm, old boy. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on to the next episode, which is Silent Enemy, which is also a watch on my list. The date is September 1st, 2150. Okay, so this episode actually takes place before Cold Front, because its date is September 1st, 2151, and Cold Front was September 12th. So this
weird.
This is a prequel to the last episode. Directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Andre Bermanis. Original air date January 16th, 2002. Silent Enemy. The show takes place. Enterprise is attacked by an unknown alien ship as Captain Archer orders the crew to install experimental phase cannons. Meanwhile, Ensign Sato was asked to find out what Lieutenant Reed's favorite food is for a birthday dinner. We get to see Lieutenant Reed's family. Because she talks to his mom, his dad, and his sister. Sato does. Other than that, I can't think of anything. I don't know really why this was on my to watch list. Seems kind of plain Jane. Anyone else want to talk about it?
I like the phase cannons.
Oh yeah,
me too. I love the phase cannons, and in a lot of ways, you know, I don't like Reed, but I like that they kind of like showed why he's the way he is. Like, he's just so. I don't know how else to say it.
Both aspects of his personality. Hey, look at my guns, but don't look at my guns.
Pretty much.
That's Lieutenant Reed in a nutshell.
Yeah, and, you know, just like the whole, like, super secret agent, you know, going to find out something about one of your buddies. Like, I don't know if I care enough about Curtis to go out and find what his favorite cake is. And these people do a good job of showing you that they care. So there's that, at least. And then there's, like, the chopsticks thing, you know. I like it. I like it because, you know, like every other episode, they're about to get their asses handed to them, and then somehow they win. You know, because that's the way we do in Star Trek.
Okay, so I want to throw something out there real quick. Because in this episode, we hear the mention of Chef, right? It always kind of drove me nuts. We never saw who he was.
It was Riker the whole time.
I choose not to believe that. I actually always thought, because I know they always referred to him as a guy, but I always thought maybe it would be Guinan or something. Like, I always thought
that would have been awesome.
But I guess that doesn't make sense because, you know, she was on the Enterprise B, right? So, as a refugee.
Well, it could have been. She
was rescued by the Enterprise B from the starship L'Quel.
Yeah.
She was trying to get back to the Nexus, but we don't know what was before that. You know what I mean? So, because she was on Earth in the 1800s with Mark Twain.
Yep.
And who knows? Maybe she stayed on Earth for another, you know, 350 years. And then, you know, she was on the Enterprise as the chef.
I'm pretty sure that more than one time Captain Archer said the chef was a man, because he said,
I think
chef, he does this, or chef, he does that.
But if it's a holographic recreation, holograms don't necessarily care who's playing the chef.
Yeah, okay.
Or
I'm just throwing it out there.
We know that she's an Elorian, right? Maybe they can switch sexes. You know, maybe she can be a man.
Yeah.
Not
you're gonna
give
Kurtzman ideas. Stop that.
Yeah.
We don't need to ruin Star Trek further.
What Curtis said.
Or they could have had, like, maybe, like, it's Guinan's brother. You know, and then Guinan shows up for an episode to see your brother. That would have been cool.
I think that she said her whole family was destroyed when the Borg came.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I will make a complaint regarding Chef, though. Every time they had food on that damn show, I had to go and get something to eat. I didn't have this problem. Well, I know what pork chops look like, and I saw them on the show, and I was like, damn it, I got to get some.
Yep.
But, like, I never got a craving for gach, for example.
No.
It's not an herb homic soup. It's not an issue I had before this show.
What I do is I get gummy worms and pretend that's gach. That way I can grab
them. That's about as far as I'd be willing to go.
Honestly, you can break them up and pretend they were tube grubs, too.
Yep.
You know, or you could eat some pho, you know, then pretend that that's your gach, because I could eat pho every day, all day. Sorry, Curtis. Pho.
I didn't say it.
I'm sure you were thinking it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Does anyone else have anything else for this episode? All right.
Nope.
Let's move on. The next episode is episode 13. It is Dear Doctor. The date is unknown. Directed by James A. Contner. Again, I'm going to butcher their last name. Andre Jacquemetin and Maria Jacquemetin wrote it. Original air date January 23rd, 2002. This is a skip on my list. The episode is significant for introducing the concepts and motivations of the Prime Directive prior to the founding of the Federation. Dr. Phlox faces a serious dilemma as a dying race begs for help from the crew of the Enterprise. The culture consists of two related races, but only the more genetically advanced race has been stricken by a planet-wide plague. So this is a side note. UPN, the network that aired Enterprise, requested that the ending of the episode be changed, something that Billingsley did not like, who played Dr. Phlox. However, he and other members of the cast and crew approved of the final episode. Due to the subject matter and the ending, it is seen as a controversial episode critically and by audience response. Although Dear Doctor received the same audience share as the previous episode, there was a 6.6% drop in viewers to 5.7 million viewers for its first broadcast. So like I said, this is a skip for me, despite all the controversy. Does anyone have anything they want to say about it?
I do.
Okay.
this is another one that I really enjoyed because these are things I think about, like on our planet, how we had, you know, a parallel species in our evolutionary line, and this is a case where both those species survived for however long to come this far, and then it's the quote unquote lesser advanced species that is going to survive. And in the huge moral conundrum, like, do you let this happen knowing that it would have happened if you didn't show up regardless, or do you, you know, play God essentially and do something about it? This is a huge thing that, you know, they have to think about in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I think that the acting was good. I actually like Crewman Cutler. I'm a fan of Crewman Cutler. She's spending more time with Dr. Phlox.
Oh, and great.
Yeah,
and she, and it was sad because she ended up passing away in real life.
Right.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, so she...
unfortunate.
Yeah, so... okay, so I'm going to talk about the actress. Her name is Kelly Waymire. On November 13, 2003, Waymire died in her home in Venice, Los Angeles, California, of cardiac arrest caused by undiagnosed cardiac arrhythmia, likely related to mitral valve prolapse, a condition with which she had been diagnosed as a teenager. Her funeral was held on November 23, 2003. Yeah, I liked her, you know, because she was the nurse character for Phlox. And then all of a sudden she was gone. And I didn't know why, because this was before I had the internet. And then I think I remember reading in, like, TV Guide or something that the actress had passed away. And because she was on an episode of Seinfeld, and she's been on a few other things as well. But it was very sad that, you know, someone so young and with such good character potential, unfortunately passed away. And I don't think Phlox never did get another nurse character, did he? Not that I can remember.
Nope.
So, because, I mean, Crusher had Ogawa, you know, McCoy had Nurse Chapel. I guess Dr. Bashir didn't really have anybody regular.
He had a Bajoran nurse, but she was sort of an extra.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, good call for that actress. All right, so we'll move on to the next episode, which is episode 14, Sleeping Dogs, date unknown, directed by Les Landau, directed by Fred Decker. Original air date, January 30th, 2002. So on my list, this is a watch. And I should point out, I have a list here of episodes to watch and not to watch that I pulled off the internet. And I kind of watched this series based on that, like my rewatch. Do you guys want to continue going with the full season, or should we split this in half?
You know, it looks like we're talking about each episode in some level of detail. We might be better off to split it.
Okay.
So for me, like, I could go through the whole season in 10 minutes because there's only like three more episodes that I like. But
yeah, no, I hear you. But it's great that everyone, you know, even the episodes I don't particularly like, I like hearing from everybody. So yeah, so this will be the last one we'll talk about for this episode. We'll split this into two.
To be honest,
boring ones, we wouldn't be here.
There's less than 10 episodes left. I mean, we could probably speed it up and make it through in a reasonable amount of time.
All right. If you guys...
Okay.
All right, let's do it.
There's 26 episodes, Richard, just so you know.
There's 12 more after this.
Yeah,
I'm good to power through if we need to.
I'm good to power through.
I'm good for both.
I
it's
need
only three that I care about. After, we're gonna, you know.
Okay. I'll. If anyone needs to take a pee break, just go ahead and we'll just power through, and we'll get back to you when you're back. If anyone needs to go at any time. So Sleeping Dogs is the 14th episode of the series. Sub-Commander T'Pol, Lieutenant Reed, and Ensign Sato are stranded on a Klingon vessel sinking into a gap. Oh, yeah, this episode. Captain Archer tries to convince a captured Klingon to help before the away team is crushed by the intense pressure of the planet's atmosphere. Yeah, this was a pretty good episode. I liked it. And also should note, Vaughn Armstrong, who plays Admiral Forrest, played the Klingon captain in this episode. So yeah, there's that. So yeah, it was a fairly good episode. Let's go Ragnar. What are your thoughts, sir?
I love this episode just because it was so much about Klingons and it spent so much time in the Klingon ship, and the crew is, you know, equally fascinated and disgusted and repulsed by the Klingons and their ship and their behavior. So yeah, it was great. This is definitely one of the ones that I like, and I think there's only two more episodes in the rest of the season that I really like. So yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, for me, there's four more episodes that are watch for me. The rest are skippable. So, yeah, so this last half should maybe go a little bit faster. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I too, really liked it. I'm a big fan of Klingons, the same as Ragnar. They brought on, you know, the Klingon female officer, Bukha, and I thought she was great. I have a little bit of fascination with Klingon females. Mm-hmm. And also,
hell yeah,
the name of the class of that Klingon ship is called the Raptor class, and I think that's badass. But overall, great episode. I love Klingon ships, and I love how disgusting and raw they are, and how terrible they are. And that's about it for me. But great episode. I don't skip this one.
Yeah, because this was the episode where they go into the mess hall, right? And there's like a Targ that's alive. Yeah, that was awesome. Curtis, your thoughts?
Well, as someone who usually doesn't appreciate the Klingon episodes as much as Richard and Ragnar, I really liked it. for like the same... Klingons? What's that?
You like Klingons too?
A little bit. actually, you know what? I didn't really like Klingons until this episode. And in my... watchings of Star Trek, this was the last series that I took in. So it was near the end of my new experiences in Star Trek that I finally started to be like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this episode was cool. You actually got to see some more depth to Klingons besides angry grunting, hitting things. Mm-hmm. And that ship is dead sexy. That thing looks so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just, it's got this stance about it. It looks like it's about to like strike, you know? Looks like it's poised.
Yeah, that
for the attack.
That's one thing I really enjoyed with Enterprise is when they would show Klingon ships, like, you know, because these are pre, you know, TNG pre original series. They made them look really cool. Mm. I think.
Yep.
Yeah, like this looks like maybe some sort of early iteration of a Bird of Prey, but yep. Still not. It was just cool to see some new ship architecture.
Yep.
That hails to like the traditional style.
Yeah, absolutely. Pardon me.
The traditional style while being new.
Yeah.
Yeah, super cool episode. Love it.
Excellent. The next episode is episode 15, Shadows of Pajem. The date is unknown, directed by Michael Viger. Story by Rick Berman and Brannon Braga. Teleplay by Mike Sussman and Phyllis Strawn. Original air date February 6th, 2002. Captain Archer and Sub-Commander T'Pol are kidnapped while en route to a planet in the Caridian system, which results in a confrontation between Vulcan and Andorian forces. The events of this episode, coupled with the Andorian incident, proved to be the basis for many future occurrences and plot devices in the following seasons of Star Trek Enterprise. These included many reprisal attempts against both Archer and T'Pol by the Vulcan High Command, and the developing trust and respect between Archer and the Andorian commander Shran. There would be a long-ranging implications for T'Pol and her family, as revealed in the fourth season episode Home. So, yes, once again, Jeffrey Combs returns as Shran. We have Vance Armstrong as Admiral Forrest, Gary Graham as Ambassador Saval. Yeah, all around this was an all right episode. Anyone else have any thoughts on this one?
I do.
Okay.
I'll make it brief, though.
Oh, yeah. No worries.
What I like about this episode is that it's important in the backstory between the Vulcans and the Andorians. Because mm-hmm. they have a very, very sordid past. And this is important in their sort of slow baby steps towards peace. And I think it was well done, and I enjoyed it. And, you know... sorry, what was his name?
Gary Graham.
Guy who played Saval?
Yep, Gary Graham.
I love him. I love Saval. I know it's probably an unpopular opinion, but I really like Saval. And I like this episode. This is a good one. I don't skip it because it's important to the story.
So Saval definitely grew on me. Like, by the end of the fourth season, I really liked him. In the beginning, I thought he was a dick.
He grew as well, which was important to the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was actually in Vulcan a few years ago. He was the one actor that year I didn't actually get to meet. I seen him.
Oh, bummer.
But, because that was the year when Catherine Hicks was there. Apollo from the original Battlestar Galactica. Richard Hatch.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony Todd. Right? Tony Todd. Yes.
Tony Todd was the star for me. I didn't see much else.
Yeah, Tony Todd. Yeah, that was amazing. Really super nice guy. But anyway, I digress. Does anyone else have any comments on this episode?
No, it's one that should be watched.
Yeah. All right. Next episode is episode 16, Shuttle Pod 1. The date is November 9th, 2151. Directed by David Livingston, written by Rick Berman and Bronn and Braga. Original air date, February 13th, 2002. This is a skip on my list. During a shuttle pod mission, Commander Tucker and Lieutenant Reed become convinced Enterprise has been destroyed and their prospects of survival are slim. Much of the episode takes place in a Star Trek shuttlecraft, Shuttle Pod 1. All right. Anyone else? All right.
I have one comment to make, and that this is a skip for me. This is a skip for me because, to me, it's kind of a boring buddy episode. I've spent a long period of time alone in a small enclosed space with one of my friends, and I know what it's like. I don't need to feel that pain every time I see this episode. That's all.
So, you're not talking about our trip to Vegas by any chance, are you?
No, absolutely not. Maybe. So it's called Fusion. Let's move on.
All right. The next episode, episode 17, Fusion, Date Unknown. Directed by Rob Hedden. Story by Rick Berman, Bronn Braga. Teleplay by Phyllis Strawn and Mike Sussman. Original air date, November 27th, 2002. Again, this is a watch on my list. Enterprise encounters a group of unconventional Vulcans, one of whom leads T'Pol into further exploring her emotions. This is the one where the guy gives her the mind meld. Yes. And now she ends up with a disease because of it. Which I found so strange. Like, because in this culture, mind melding is, in this time, Vulcans don't believe in mind melding. They think it's unnatural. I always kind of took it to be like their allegory for like gays, to be honest with you. Like, this was, you know, like, I don't know. I think that's the way they were going with this. Because anyone who mind melded was like, it was, you know, you were frowned upon, you were ostracized from Vulcan society. And then eventually it becomes acceptable. And eventually, I mean, in the Star Trek, I grew up with, mind meld was normal. And it, played a big part in Star Trek II and Star Trek III, the movies. So I always thought, like, this was kind of like their allegory for that.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Because Star Trek, that's the thing. Star Trek always they talk about subjects that are, because like, you know, like 20 years ago, you know, you didn't really see gay people on, you know, on TV, that sort of thing. And now it's more acceptable. Like, you know, like as a society, we've changed a lot. And I kind of think this was like an allegory of that, you know, in the way that like the original series, you know, they did that episode where it was basically an allegory for the Vietnam War. That's always how I took it, but you know, that's just me though. Anyone else have any thoughts on this episode?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Curtis.
I do too.
May I?
Yes, go absolutely. Ahead.
Yeah, please do.
So I actually think this is a really important episode for the overall, like there's one big plot line that covers all four seasons of the series, and it kind of just gets touched every few episodes a little bit, and eventually it culminates in the episode where Archer has the Katra of, is it Serac?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So it all culminates there. So this is one of those episodes that sort of pokes a little bit more at that. I think it builds upon what we found out about the Vulcans in the Andorian incident, and that is these Vulcans of this particular time are totally hypocrites. And I have a theory. I don't think it's that Vulcans disapprove of mind melding for what it is. I think it's that the Vulcan authorities don't approve of it because it's part of the teachings of Serac, and they want to keep basically everything Serac had to say hidden, which is why Serac's followers had to go hide in the mountains out in that crazy...
In the forge.
Hope nobody heard that. That's my cat. Yeah, in the forge. And so I think it's more about...
Gotcha.
I think it's more about the Vulcan authorities trying to hold on to their own power and suppress this, like, grassroots movement that's coming up, which we eventually see it does because, you know, Spock mind melds, no problem, and all these other good things. So I think it's more of a commentary on that myself. I think
yeah.
The authorities trying to hold on to power and fearing the uprising of the people, and I think that mind melding is just one aspect of that, and that's why they have to disappear.
Ragnar's house, I think.
For all those reasons,
yeah.
I think this is a really important episode because it's just one more stepping stone toward the conclusion. And the episode isn't particularly enjoyable in and of itself, but the ideas that it brings up are important later.
Okay, so real quick, like in those episodes we were talking about, I know we're jumping ahead, in the fourth season, that female character from that female Vulcan that's with Archer in those episodes, that is the old lady from Star Trek 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think is her name.
T'Pau. Yeah, so I was...
I don't know if it was the same person. I kind of got the feeling that in the original series, I think it was... Wasn't it T'Pau? I don't know.
But I mean, who knows? Like maybe like T'Pau, T'Pau. Maybe that's like Chris and Dustin, right? Like it's like maybe it's a common name for females. Could be different characters. Yeah. But anyway, Richard, you were going to comment on this episode.
Much the same as Curtis, honestly. This is a very important episode. I did like some of the characters. I really liked the engineer Kov, and I really enjoyed his character in this. I didn't much care for the other guy. Thought he was kind of a jerk. But yeah, this is a very important episode. This is a must watch if you want to understand sort of the evolution of how Vulcans became how they are and what we know them in TOS and beyond.
Yeah. All right. So the next seven episodes are all skips for me. So I'll go through. I'll read out each one. If any of them grab or you guys want to talk about it, just jump in. Okay.
There's only one that I like. So.
Okay. So the next episode is episode 18, Rogue Planet, Date Unknown. directed by Alan Croker, story by Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, and Chris Black. Teleplay by Chris Black. Original air date, March 20th, 2002. All right. Next episode, episode 19, Acquisitions. Date unknown. Directed by James Whitmore Jr. Written by, story by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga. Teleplay by, I'm going to butcher their names again. Maria Jacquemetin and Andre Jacquemetin. Original air date, March 27th, 2002. Okay, so this was a skip on my list, but it actually is not. I apologize, I screwed up. As soon as I read the title, I knew. So this is the Ferengi episode. This is the episode where you get Jeffrey Combs as Krem, Ethan Phillips as a Ferengi, Clint Howard as a Ferengi, and there's another guy, Matt Malloy, as a Ferengi. And basically, they're looting the Enterprise. It was a fun episode. It was fun to see Ethan Phillips play the jerk in this episode. I think Jeffrey Combs, he plays like the shy, nice Ferengi, doesn't he? If I remember correctly.
I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
I think he does, yeah.
Yeah, he's the one that's guarding Archer, right?
Yeah, he plays the less aggressive Ferengi.
Yeah. So I actually like this episode, even though, you know, continuity doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyone else want to comment on Acquisition?
This is the only remaining episode in the season that I really care for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought this was an awesome episode. I love Ferengi episodes, and this one's a banger, man.
Excellent.
I just got to ask. So, Ferenginar is pretty freaking far from the solar system.
Yep.
Nobody was really going that much faster than Warp 6 at this point, if I'm not mistaken. Why the hell would the Ferengi be that far from home robbing people? It just doesn't. Yeah.
There's one word that will explain everything.
Because the script said so.
Profit.
No, you're right. I get it, but like that's a lot of fuel cost. You know. I don't know. For me, this episode breaks continuity, and I can't get down.
Yeah, that I never thought of it that way. You got an interesting point there.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but he does. But I still like this episode.
Oh yeah.
I enjoy it just for what it is. I like Ferengi, and I like the idea of like them, you know, being Ferengi pirates. So yeah, I like it.
And I got to give kudos to Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, the creators of Enterprise, because they wrote a lot of episodes. I didn't realize this until we started doing this episode. Because to be honest, like when I watch the episodes, I don't always pay attention to who's written it. At the time, and man, Rick Berman and Brandon Braga really wrote a lot of episodes this first season.
Yep.
And Rick Berman's not like he's not really a writer per se. Like he wrote some TNG episodes, and I think that was about it. You know, he's a Hollywood producer guy, but I guess he started writing a little bit more. Like, I know when I just seen an interview with him, and he did say Enterprise was the show that he's most proud of because that's the one he did the most as a writer. So anyway, next episode is episode 20, Oasis, Date Unknown, directed by Jim Charleston, story by Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, and Stephen Beck, teleplay by Stephen Beck, original air date April 3rd, 2002. All right, next episode.
I just want to say I did like this episode. I did like the episode, and I liked that Rene Auberjonois starred in it.
Yeah.
And I liked the concept.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, that's pretty much it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was fun, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, I forgot.
I was just going to add the same thing. That's the one with Rene Auberjonois. That's all I got to say about it.
Excellent. All right. Next episode, episode 21, Detained. Date unknown, directed by David Livingston. Story by Rick Berman and Bronan Braga. Teleplay by Mike Sussman and Phyllis Strawn. Original air date, April 24th, 2002. Even though this is a skip for me, this is a notable episode for me because Dean Stockwell makes his guest appearance as Colonel Gratt.
That's right. That's great.
And, as I mentioned on our previous episode, I'm a Quantum Leap fan. I love Dean Stockwell.
He's great.
I knew it was inevitable. Like, I knew they got to have him as a guest star on Star Trek Enterprise at some point. And he plays a good bad guy. You know, like, because he was one of the bad Cylons on the new Battlestar Galactica.
Oh. And he was the bad Cylon.
Yeah, he was creepy as F on that show.
He was incredible.
So, yeah. So, anyway, that's all I got.
I do want to say I did like the episode, and I do like that they showed a little bit more about the Silaban people, that they're not all soldiers.
If you want
to learn about that, it's a good episode to watch. I like it, but I don't have much else to say about it.
You're right. I forgot about the Sulaban angle on this one. All right, because when I did my rewatch, I actually skipped this one. So I think I got to go back and rewatch that. All right, episode 22, Vox Sala. I'm hoping I said that right. Date unknown. Directed by Roxanne Dawson, B'Elanna Torres. Story by Rick Berman and Bronan Braga and Fred Decker. Teleplay by Fred Decker. Original air date, May 1st, 2002. Von Armstrong once again makes an appearance in this episode as the Cretacean captain? Cretacean? And that's about all I got. Anyone else?
I don't have anything to say about this one.
Yeah.
Von Armstrong sure makes a lot of appearances as not just Admiral Forrest, but a lot of extra characters in the show. Like, you know, they must either really like him or he really had a lot of debt and was like, come on, guys, I need work. Because, yeah, the nice thing about Star Trek is, take Jeffrey Combs, for example. You know, you can play multiple characters because they're different species. You know, it's actually kind of cool that way. But Jeffrey Combs, you know, he's probably good friends with the producers. So that's probably why they're like, yeah, let's get him in on this. Same with J.G. Hertzler, you know, same thing.
Yeah.
All right. So episode 23, Fallen Hero. The date is February 9th, 2152. Directed by Patrick Norris. Story by Rick Berman, Bronan Braga, and Chris Black. Teleplay by Alan Cross. Original air date, May 8th, 2002.
I actually really like this one.
All right. Take it away there, Richard.
So basically, the ambassador, you know, there's a huge, like, secret plot, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, coup things going on, and it's great. Ambassador Villar, the female ambassador for Vulcan, actually plays other characters in Star Trek.
Yep.
She's Juliana Soong, Data's mother, essentially.
Oh,
she's also a character called Inina Tondro in the DS9 episode called Dax. It's where one of her former hosts, you know, killed somebody and, you know, there's a whole search for her, and they had to have a judgment that said that she's not liable for that. So I really enjoyed her, and I thought it was funny that they had these, you know, preconceptions about her, and she's not like that. She was actually kind of cool. I like the whole, secret ploys and subplots, and I actually liked this episode. This was fun to watch, and then the whole shore leave thing, and it was good. I enjoyed it.
And Ambassador Villar also plays Eloise Hawking on Lost, which completes the circle, because there's someone from Lost in all the Star Trek series, except possibly TOS, if you haven't seen.
Yeah, you are right. She was in 7 episodes of Lost. I'm looking at her thing right now. Yeah, she's a great actress. She's been on a lot of great shows. And yeah, good call out, Richard. I totally would have passed her by in this episode. And for next episode, I don't know if you guys are up for this or not. Because again, this episode features Von Armstrong as Admiral Forrest this time. I think we should do a drinking game. Every time Von Armstrong shows up as Admiral Forrest or an alien, we should do a shot. That's what I think.
Nice.
See how drunk.
I think we should do that for next episode because I'm not prepared right now.
Oh yeah, no, not tonight, not tonight. Because we'd be doing a lot of shots. We'd have to catch up, but.
Yeah, we'd be dead.
That's a drinking game, man. Right there, Von Armstrong. You know how many episodes can he be in? All right, so that was Fallen Hero. I just gotta checkmark that. And next episode is Desert Crossing. So this actually aired the same day as Fallen Hero. It was for some reason they had 2 episodes on that night. And this takes place 3 days after that episode. So it's February 12th, 2152. Directed by David Strayton. Once again, story by Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, and Andre Bermanis. Teleplay by Andre Bermanis. And again, the air date is May 8th, 2002. Captain Archer and Commander Tucker are invited to a desert planet by a man named Zobral, only to discover that he is a terrorist with ulterior motives. No Von Armstrong in this episode. Oh, go ahead, Richard. You talk about it.
I actually really like it. Basically, Zobral wants to get Captain Archer's help in, you know, leveling the government because the government's super corrupt. And I love the character of Zobral. He's kind of a badass and he's fun, and he likes to have a good time. And fun fact for Curtis, Zobral is played by Clancy Brown, who is also in Lost.
Yeah, he is.
And a billion other things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But he was also in Highlander, I think. The list goes on.
Redemption.
Yes, great movie. Season 1
of Punisher, The Mandalorian.
Right. And yeah, he's awesome. And I like this episode. Yeah. I like this episode. It was good.
You guys forgot his most iconic role. He's Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob SquarePants.
In SpongeBob.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, he's great. I love Clancy Brown.
Oh, he's awesome.
Thanks for calling that out, Richard. I would have passed that up, too. Yeah, he's great.
Well, if it comes to Lost, Curtis will probably call it out, and if I get there first, I will.
Oh, yeah. I love Lost,
you
too.
You won this one, Richard.
I did.
Okay, so we're down to the last 2 episodes. So they're both watches on my list. The next episode is episode 25, 2 Days and 2 Nights. The date of the show is February 18th, 2152, directed by Worf, Michael Dorn. Story by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, teleplay by Chris Black, original air date May 15th, 2002. Captain Archer and crew take shore leave on Ryza. Back on their spacecraft, NX-01, the alien Phlox enters hibernation, while T'Pol keeps an eye on the starship. The episode features numerous guest stars playing the roles of those that the crew of the NX-01 encounters on their visit to the Pleasure Planet. This was the episode, if I remember correctly, this is the one where Tucker and Reed are about to hook up with those really hot chicks, and then they turn out to be dudes.
And then they get jumped,
and then they're left in their underwear tied up in a basement on Ryza.
Yeah.
And also, is this the episode where Sato gets her funk on with a dude?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. And then
with a super complicated language.
Yeah. So you get to see the more feminine side of Sato. And this is, she's very beautiful. Like, you know, you don't really see that side. Like I said, you know, like T'Pol walks around with a catsuit. Sato doesn't wear a catsuit. She wears a normal uniform. But then when you see her like in this episode, she's in her swimsuit and stuff on Rise. I was like, holy crap, she is hot. This is the episode Mayweather breaks an arm or something, or a leg, and then they got to get Phlox out of hibernation, and he's like drunk Phlox, sort of.
That part was awesome. That was my favorite part of the episode. Yeah. He's all sleepy and drunk and whatnot. That was awesome.
Yeah. Man, I wish I could, like, as much as I, you know, because maybe it was before we were recording, we were talking about napping and stuff. And I was saying how much I love my naps.
Missed the nap conversation.
I wish I could be like Phlox, where it's like every couple years I just sleep for 2 days, and then like I could get so much accomplished if I didn't have to sleep.
You know how many video games I could play?
How many movies you could watch? Books you could read?
I could get a ton accomplished. None of it would be useful, but I'd get a bunch of ton.
Right. Like I would just love to get that out of my system. You know, 2 days, you hibernate, and then you're good for a couple of years. I think that'd be awesome. So anyone else have any more thoughts on this episode?
No, I don't have a lot to say about this episode.
All right, no problem. So we are on the final episode. This is the season finale for season one. So this episode 26. It's called Shockwave, Part One. Date is unknown, directed by Alan Croker, once again, written by Rick Berman and Bronn Braga. Original air date, May 22nd, 2002. So this is part one of a two-part episode, and part one of is the first season finale. So part one, while visiting an alien mining colony, the shuttle accidentally sets off a fire and large amounts of tetrazine in the atmosphere, instantly incinerating all 3,600 colonists. Despite Lieutenant Reed's precautions, Captain Archer personally puts full blame on himself and all the deaths caused. He doesn't argue with Starfleet Admiral Forrest when the Enterprise mission is officially canceled and the ship is ordered to return home. Later, Archer is suddenly transported back 10 months into the past. He encounters crewman Daniels, who warns him that the Suliban are trying to sabotage Enterprise's mission. He wants to help Archer discover the truth. So as the episode goes forward, Archer puts T'Pol in command. So basically, yeah, they're surrounded by the Suliban, 20 to 30 Suliban cell ships. They, you know, basically have the Enterprise dead to rights. Archer puts T'Pol in command, and he gets into the turbo lift, and then he's transported through time. He's in the 31st century, building overlooking a devastated city landscape. Daniels appears behind him, telling him that by bringing him into the future to protect him, caused this dramatic change in the timeline. Archer asks to be sent back to repair the damage, but since all time travel equipment is gone, they are both trapped in the future. Yeah, so we would be taking a drink because Von Armstrong is in this episode. Silic is in this episode. Gary Graham is the Vulcan ambassador, Saval. Yeah, I like this episode. I thought it was a fine season finale. As I said, I really enjoyed the temporal Cold War storyline, and you know, it was a good cliffhanger to end on. Richard, your thoughts?
I really like this episode, and I think this is where they introduce Future Guy, which I wish they would have done more with. He had a really cool, like, sub role, and I wish they would have done more with Future Guy. Beyond that, it's a super important episode in the arc of the Temporal War. Mm-hmm. It's right in the middle of the overall arc, and then there's a, you know, two-parter for this episode and the next one. And there's a lot of, you know, espionage and really cool stuff. And, yeah, this is a great episode. I like it.
Yeah, like, the Future Guy, he was in the first episode. Because he was talking to Silic then. But, yeah, I always wanted to know more about him. I always assumed he was a Romulan. So, But I don't think we ever, as far as I know, we never did get that answer one way or the other.
No, we didn't.
Ragnar, your thoughts?
You know, I think this was a good episode. I think it, you know, does what you want a season finale to do, which is draw you in deeper and make you eagerly await the conclusion. So, you know, I think this was a good episode. This is definitely one of the stronger episodes in the season and builds on the temporal time war, you know, subplot, I guess, or I don't know if it's a subplot, main plot, really, running plot. So yeah, I liked it. But for me, it wasn't a banger. I just think it was a good episode.
Yeah. Yeah, this definitely could have been just like a two-parter in the middle of the season. Like, it, not necessarily a season finale. But I mean, to be fair, it did make me want to come back and find out, like, how are they going to fix this? But anyway, Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I dig it. I like how they left it off on the cliffhanger that they did, where it was like, wow, like, this is so messed up. How the hell are they going to fix this? Mm-hmm. I really dug it. And then, because I didn't watch it when it was releasing, I just hit next episode and found out right away. I didn't have to wait at all.
Excellent. All right. Well, that we finished the entire season one. So I suspect, you know, as we go forward with the other seasons, we might have to make them two-part episodes. Just because there's as the series goes forward, it gets better and better, especially like season 3 and 4.
Season two is so much better than season one.
Yeah, like I broke it down. Like for me, season one has 10 episodes that you have to watch. Season two has 15 you have to watch. Season three has 16, and season four has 17. Yep. So each season, in my opinion, it gets better and better.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So I think we'll probably, starting next episode, we'll definitely break them in half, just because. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. As for myself, Chris Lockhart, you can find me here on the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. We just recorded and dropped our first episode of Geek Fallout, the first one that I've done in like 3 or 4 years. So we got that episode up there, so if you want to check that out, it's our spring 2021 episode. And yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at ChrisLock1701. Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Like Curtis said last time, right here. I don't really do a lot of social media. I watch YouTube and other, you know, alt tech things, but that's pretty much it. I'm right here talking to you guys.
Awesome. And Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
I, too, am right here for the time being anyway. I mentioned a few episodes ago on the Deep Space Nine podcast that I'd like to undertake my own podcast project soon. It'll be a hyper-focused Lost project. I know we're going to cover Lost, but I want to cover it in a lot more painstaking detail. I think we have patience for as a group of four people. So.
Excellent.
I'll keep you guys posted.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. And last but not least, Ragnar. Where can we find you, sir?
Well, my main website, RagnarTheTrader.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram as Ragnar the Trader. And maybe later this year, you'll start to see me in person at trade shows again as the vaccinations roll out across the country and restrictions are at least being discussed about being lifted. They're not being lifted, but they're talking about lifting them. So it's entirely possible that in July or August or September, I'll be back at shows and you can come talk to me in person, which is what I really love doing.
Okay, well, if the Edmonton show is a go, we all got to get together and meet up at some point.
Oh, and do a podcast or a beer night or both, for sure.
And in the meantime, gentlemen out there in the audience, it's never too early to start thinking about your winter beard. Ragnar sells some awesome beard products.
Oh, thanks, man.
I second that.
I try them out on myself first for science.
Science, right.
Well, if I was allowed to grow a beard, Ragnar, I would buy. But even if I was allowed, I don't think I could grow a beard. But I just have one of those faces that's meant to be shaved, I guess.
I think every man should have a beard. That's my
personal. Don't get me wrong. I would love to have a beard, but like for work, I can't. Unfortunately, I got to be clean shaved.
Yeah. Half mask, respirator, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We'd rather you were alive than had a beard. So.
But even when I didn't have to have, you know, for my work, like my previous job, I still could not grow good facial hair. So, I don't know. I think it's because I'm part native. I think it's my native heritage because you don't see a lot of big bearded native people.
No,
it's not really.
But on the plus side, you don't see a lot of bald native people either.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, so. I got the other side of the genes. I'm part native as well, but I can grow a beard, but I'm going bald, man. It sucks.
Yeah.
And then there's Ragnar and myself. We're basically Vikings with awesome beards and long hair.
Yeah, the volume of hair in my shower drain suggests baldness is not going to be an issue for me.
Excellent. I did try growing a mustache. Like sometimes in Movember, I'll try and grow a mustache, but for some reason I get like the reverse Hitler, like. You know, like Hitler had under his nose. I my hair doesn't grow under my nose, so it's like I got one of them French mustaches. You know, like one of them French villains. And I am part French too, so maybe that is part of my French heritage. I don't know.
Could be, man.
But yeah. But anyway. This is an episode. This was Trek 1701. This was our Enterprise Season 1 episode, and we will be back in the not too distant future to discuss Season 2. So have a good night and kapla.